Welcome to Sound Ethics in Healthcare from the Department of Veterans Affairs National Center for Ethics in Healthcare. The topic of this edition is preventing, mitigating, and managing conflicts between clinicians and surrogates related to life-sustaining treatment decisions. Barbara Chenko, a medical ethicist with the National Center for Ethics in Healthcare, emphasizes that for a patient without decision-making capacity, surrogates generally assume the same rights and authorities as the patient with respect to decisions about treatments and procedures.
When a patient loses capacity, the requirements to conduct shared decision-making on the part of the provider and the team doesn't cease. In VA and in general, we rely on a surrogate to participate in that shared decision-making process. All the same principles and procedures that would apply to holding a conversation with the patient about the treatment options, explaining the risks and the benefits and the burdens, should be held with the identified surrogate.
Dr. Ken Berkowitz, Chief of Ethics Consultation at the National Center for Ethics in Healthcare, says that the role of the provider is to lead the shared decision-making process.
During that decision-making process, the provider needs to be professional and empathetic and work hard to form a relationship with the surrogate. They need to communicate effectively so that the surrogate has the appropriate information on which to base their thinking and their decisions. And they also need to guide the surrogate so that the surrogate understands their responsibilities.
Dr. Ellen Fox is VA's Chief Officer for Ethics in Healthcare.
Surrogates are not supposed to tell you what they want. They're supposed to tell you what the patient would want. So you need to say to them something like, "You are here because you know your dad better than anyone else in the world. You know what was important to him, and you know him as a person. So that's why I need you to help me figure out what he would want, because he can't speak for himself anymore. And if you don't know exactly what he would want, well, think about who he is as a person and what he values, maybe some of the decisions he made in the past, and together we'll figure out what's best for him."
Dr. Jefferson Rogers is a clinical psychologist and the ethics consultation coordinator at VA Gulf Coast Veterans Healthcare System in Biloxi, Mississippi. Dr. Rogers recounts the case of a patient with advanced dementia and multiple comorbidities who was admitted to the intensive care unit with no advance directive. The healthcare team did not believe there was evidence that the patient would have wanted life-sustaining treatment. The patient's wife disagreed.
The wife believed that what he wanted was to have any type of care that could keep him alive for as long as possible. She wanted him to be full code. And he coded a few times, they were able to bring him back, and he continued to get more and more edema. The nurses, after a period of time, they felt like they were torturing the gentleman. The wife would still come every day and just sit in his room, so it was something that was very meaningful to her. We tried to help her out, we got chaplains very much involved, and we continued to let her know that she was in control of his code status.
In such situations, it is important to remember that prolonging the patient's life, even for a short time, can be a legitimate goal of care when it is consistent with the patient's values and preferences, or, if those are unknown, the patient's best interests. Dr. David Alfondre is a medical ethicist with the National Center for Ethics in Healthcare.
If prolonging life is an identified goal of care on behalf of the patient, then intervention should be directed at trying to prolong life. I think where providers get stuck is that there are ethically acceptable limits to surrogates' requests for particular treatments. So if there's no chance that an intervention will meet an identified goal of care, then that certainly doesn't need to be offered to the patient.
Dr. Jefferson Rogers.
At one point, we clarified that while it was the wife's role as a decision maker related to code status, that it was the physician's role to decide what treatments were clinically indicated, and that they did not have to provide treatments that they did not feel could meet goals and could even result in harm to the veteran.
It is important to note that having a small chance of achieving a goal of care is not the same as having no chance. Treatments that have some chance of helping achieve a goal of care, even if that chance is small, should be offered. Providers sometimes make personal judgments about the value of treatments with only a small chance of achieving a goal of care, deciding that some are not worth pursuing given their burden to the patient and the low likelihood of their success. However, the provider's role is not to determine whether those trade-offs would be acceptable to the patient, but rather to explain them to the surrogate. If there is no clear indication of the patient's preferences, the provider should help the surrogate explore the best interest of the patient, given what is known about the patient's values. This can require multiple discussions over a period of time. Dr. Rogers.
So we continued to just work with her, and we really focused not only on our respect for her, but also on what was in the best interest of the patient. You know, sometimes it's not done as quickly as you would like, and sometimes it's not as easy as you would like. But what we always want to do is try to reach consensus among all the involved parties and help them really understand why something might be ethically justifiable or not. And then they can hopefully feel good about their decision and know that they're working in what's the best interest of the party who's incapacitated, can't speak for themselves.
Sometimes the conflict between the surrogate and the treatment team centers around the interpretation of the patient's advance directive. The contents of the advance directive can shed light on the patient's preferences, even what the patient might have considered to be in their best interest, but the surrogate and the treatment team may interpret the contents of that document differently. When such a disagreement arises, it is important for the treatment team to remember that advance directives are often vaguely worded and open to interpretation, and that the surrogate is in a better position than the treatment team to clarify the patient's intent. Dr. Ken Berkowitz.
Well, I think whenever you're having a discussion about the possibility of overriding a surrogate's decisions or removing a surrogate, I think you have to go back to our basic initial presumption that in general, the surrogate has the same rights and authorities as the patient would have in healthcare decision making. It's a pretty high bar to think about a circumstance where you're going to overrule a capacitated patient's decision. And I think similarly, it's a pretty high bar to think about when you as a treatment team member will be on solid footing in terms of overriding a surrogate's decision or to have the surrogate removed, since that's well within their authority usually to make those decisions.
Barbara Chenko.
I think that when providers come across these situations, they need to recognize them as an opportunity to really try and unpack and uncover and deal with the source of the request. Why is it that the surrogate is asking for this? And again, continue in a shared decision-making process, a collaborative process, to focus and sometimes refocus the surrogate on the patient and or explain why the procedures or the treatments that the surrogate is requesting would not advance the goals that they've determined for the patient.
If after all of that, you get to an intractable disagreement where the team member feels really that the surrogate just can't be allowed to continue and they really think that they've reached an impasse in their professional judgment that they can't allow things to continue, then I think that they need to get help. I think the Ethics Consult Service can be an effective way of working through these impasses between teams and surrogates. And these are people who can come in a neutral way and hopefully be effective at laying out for everyone, clarifying really what's the source of the conflict, getting the right information that they need to think through the problem, and then helping, working with the people to analyze the situation, understand what are the ethically justifiable options, and actually who gets to make the decision about how things should proceed.
Additional information on conflicts related to a surrogate's decisions about treatments or procedures can be found in the Informed Consent Handbook, VHA Handbook 1004.01, and the VHA National Ethics Committee Report, Ethical Aspects of the Relationship Between Clinicians and Surrogate Decision Makers. For links to documents and other resources mentioned in this production, visit ethics.va.gov/education. If you have a topic that you would like to see presented in a podcast or multimedia production, send an email to vhaethics@va.gov. Sound Ethics in Healthcare is brought to you by the Department of Veterans Affairs, National Center for Ethics in Healthcare.